This is Help and Hope, an audio ministry of CCEF. Today's episode gives us the opportunity to sit in on a portion of a small group discussion led by Dr. Ed Welch on the subject of shame.
In the history of biblical counseling, if you have low self-esteem, it's a reflection of your pride. And I have perpetrated that as much as anybody. Works for me the vast majority of time. I feel bad about myself because I want to be great and I don't feel great. So enough said. And so that was sort of the end of the biblical counseling story. But I guess my argument is that we have not been good parsers of low self-esteem. Low self-esteem is indeed many times a reflection of just our own pride. But low self-esteem is, especially for Americans, English-speaking Americans, it's a way of talking about shame when you live in a culture that doesn't have a language to talk about shame. It's not this woe is me that that we can see with a pride-driven low self-esteem. It's I'm contaminated, I'm wrong, I'm exposed. So that would be, I think that would be another way into this. It has been this lacunae in our work, I think, for a couple of decades. And as a result, there are ways that I think we could miss people. Let me give you just another angle on this. In our circles, ecclesiastically, theologically, there's a resurgence of discussion about justification by faith, sort of circling the wagons. N.T. Wright has been part of that discussion, and that has been the issue of Scripture. It's been the focal point of Scripture, and obviously, most of us have great appreciation for that particular teaching in that event, but it is incomplete and unsatisfactory to a very significant part of the church, where it goes like this. And I think I wrote this in the beginnings of that manuscript in some way. You go before a judge and you're declared not guilty, and you walk out and you're still contaminated. Frankly, practically, no condemnation is meaningless. Okay, it's probably, if you're, is it better to be not condemned than condemned? I guess, but it doesn't matter. You still feel condemned. My point is that you go into the vast majority of churches, Protestant churches, and you'll hear about justification by faith, and justification by faith, I'm exaggerating just a little bit, is irrelevant to this problem. Okay, so those are some of the ways we can move into it. Maybe I'll give you one other. Culturally, a way into it would be, we're not a shame culture. Asian cultures are shame cultures, and African cultures are shame cultures. Actually, when you think about it, every culture in the whole universe is a shame culture, except for Western cultures, which does raise the question, what's wrong with us? is this really this guilt shame thing? Well, obviously it's not that easy. It's probably safer to say that older cultures just are more sophisticated in understanding dynamics of human beings, and so they talk about shame all the time. Younger cultures, especially American culture, there's a lack of sophistication, and so it gets funneled into this low self-esteem stuff, which is a very broad category, which unfortunately leaves issues of shame untouched. But it's still there. So that's all to say. I think at this particular time in history, there's just a number of fascinating ways into it. Now, obviously, you can see where I'm going here. The thesis is that this is a huge issue in Scripture. It's huge. It's You know, how do you prioritize themes in Scripture? Well, when Scripture starts off, they were naked and without shame. It's, you're thinking, this is, you know, this, for something to start off in this resounding way, this is really important in Scripture. And then, right on the heels of that, you know, they were naked and they're ashamed. I mean, you are on high alert for this particular theme. I am not a counter in Scripture, so anytime I have numbers in anything that I ever write, it's because I like cheated and I lifted them from somebody else. But you know, if it's more than 25, I'm not going to count it. But the word is from counters that for every one reference to guilt, you find 10 references to shame in Scripture. You know, one person just a bad counter and wanting to find shame everywhere. When you really look at Scripture through the lens of that particular theme, you do see it's everywhere. And it really seems to be a consuming theme in Scripture. And arguably, Scripture is posing the question, what do I do with my shame? That is the fundamental question. Definitions of it, some of you can give definitions better than I can probably. What are some of the images that seem to be attached to it? Well, it seems to be that there are three dominant issues. The first one, obviously, is nakedness, the idea of being seen and exposed. So that's where Scripture begins. It develops from there to the theme of contamination. You're dirty, okay? You're unclean, okay? And connected to the theme, the metaphor of uncleanness, would be the theme of outcast, rejected, outside the camp, those kinds of things. There are other ways you can approach shame, but they seem, you know, look for those three interconnected themes in Scripture, and you're going to find shame. Now, if you want to even enlarge the scope, you consider what's the opposite of shame, okay? And then it just makes it even more vivid. The opposite of shame would be things like glory, okay, honor, and here's one that makes things come alive, strength, okay? Strength is the opposite of shame. Because in the ancient Near East and even New Testament times, weakness was a way of speaking about people's shame. Riches, okay, would be the opposite of shame. You see, all of a sudden, all kinds of other Scripture comes in view, and all of a sudden, you start to think, hey, the Apostle Paul is up to something here. When he boasts about weakness and just can't stop boasting about his weakness, he's got shame in view the whole time. And he's up to something, and he is up to this reconfiguration of the entire universe as we know it. And central to that reconfiguration is a reconfiguration of shame itself. So he does something that here's an apologetic for Scripture. No human being would have boasted in their weakness. It's just impossible to invent such a thing. It's similar to the Scripture talking about men and women being equal. It's just nobody would have written such a thing. Cultures wouldn't allow it, nor would they allow somebody boasting in their weakness. So anyway, those are some of the words that seem to be attached to it. I guess my desire this morning is a couple things. One is, it's just to magnify, not magnify this, but just to see it just a bit more vividly. And in my own experience is that once you see it in Scripture, it's just like when you buy a car, you know, you buy a Volkswagen, and you never saw a Volkswagen before, but now everybody in the universe is driving a Volkswagen because you're locked into it. I guess that's my desire, that this would be a theme that, if it's true that this is really a critical theme in Scripture, in our natural reading of Scripture, we would would just become more and more evident. And also in our relationships with other people, it would be something that we see more clearly. And once you begin to see it, you really do see it everywhere. You know, one of the things that some of the teachers have wrestled with is there still this sense that we're sin hunters? And obviously, sin is a huge issue, and we have to consider it seriously. But I think that shame has the potential to finally have something large enough that that's not the only thing we're doing. Here's something clearly on the mind of God, and as we trace it, as we locate it, and guide people through it, see the richness of Scripture in it. I guess the other thing is that we're all in this because we want to be proclaimers of good news, and when you're on the theme of shame, just I guess like most everything else in Scripture, it's you recognize that here's something that the world is clueless on, utterly clueless. I mean, they define it brilliantly. They used to define it brilliantly. You know, when they were talking, when sexual abuse was really the issue. They defined it brilliantly, but after a while, you realize just defining something brilliantly is not necessarily going to help people. It just raises these issues that are even more painful, and giving yourself a little pat on the back every now and then, saying you're okay and finding healthy relationships is just impotent to deal with something that is just powerful. And to see the Scripture just page after page after page saying, all right, we're going to keep knocking away at this thing. Okay, we're going to keep going after it and going after it, and it just never stops. Here would be an example. Here's Peter, and he's writing to these people who are going through suffering. Okay, now that's low class. Okay, people who go through this kind of suffering, they're the dregs of society. They are the outcasts, and Peter is trying to say to people, no. You got to recognize when you look, you know, when you just sort of meditate on the cross, everything is righted. Okay, everything is configured the way it was intended to be, and when your Messiah is crucified in the most shameful of ways. Okay? Then your own suffering, it has a different look to it, has a different feel to it. And then he toward the end, he says, oh, by the way, let me tell you who you are. You're this royal priesthood. You're this chosen nation. Okay. You're this, and he just loads up these adjectives that in counseling, you know, we just have this authorization when we look at it as pride, when we look at somebody's low self-esteem as pride, you're reluctant to load these adjectives up because they're just going to puff them up and make them feel, you know, better about themselves. But when the issue is shame, it's life-changing. I'm talking to a woman right now where, you know, the story of shame just fits through what weaves throughout her whole life. And her shorthand that you can see it immediately, giving her hope, is that she has been chosen by God and she belongs to God. It's the end of that First Peter stuff, and it just changes everything for her. Okay, and it's become her. Okay, in the midst of difficult relationships and, you know, the experience of rejection is something she experiences every hour of her life. As she sort of races toward that conclusion, it just revolutionizes her experience of life, and it leads to all kinds of fruit: patience, moving toward people in love rather than backing off. So that's, you know, those are some of the places you end up as you trace out the Scripture.
But what the scripture does is before it races out there, it just takes you through it, real methodically. Okay, just one brick after another until you finally are prepared for the importance of the cross. So again, my particular interest is just to locate this thing and just say it's bigger than anything that we could imagine. And in some sense, that's enough.
We hope you have been encouraged by what you have heard today. This audio ministry is supported through the generous support of listeners like you. If you would like to find out more about CCEF's counseling and training opportunities, please visit us on the web at ccef.org.